welcome to a Made of Fail production.
Frustrated into the goddamn word for it! This is bullshit!
The Signature Move Podcast. With your hosts, George, Brian.
You are going to find out that we are a perfect combination.
Excellent. Perfect combination. Excellent.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, Made to Fail Productions is proud to present to you Brian K. Lane Jr., George W. Hatch III, the Signature Move Podcast!
You know, I was really hoping you were going to say the American males, even.
Oh, no. Why would I remind myself of Buff Bagwell?
Because he's the stuff, obviously. Off to a good start.
Oh, fail so hard. So this is episode one of the Signature Moves podcast. I'm George.
I'm Brian.
But anyway, we're here to talk about wrestling. Professional wrestling. Not the Olympics kind, because that's going to be going on next couple of months.
Men in tights. Grabbing other men, pinning them to the ground for more than 3 seconds, usually.
What exactly are you describing?
Wrestling.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... Anyway, so this week we're discussing what's happened on Raw. And for the record, I just want to go ahead and get this out of the way. We're not going to be really discussing SmackDown, because I don't think either of us watch it.
Our schedules are too wonky
to
catch it, except for if we want to do results.
Exactly. I mean, Brian watches it. You can't watch it, can you?
Occasionally I watch it, but that's on like the off chance I happen to be there on Friday.
And I am always working on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, so I can't watch it.
We really don't want to do a result-oriented show where we just tell you the results of the match either. So it wouldn't be fair, you know.
Yeah, this is going to be commentary about basically the WWE. And for those of you saying, well, what about TNA? Fuck TNA.
Fuck it hard.
Fuck it long. Fuck it with commitment.
Let's get Pac-Man Jones in there.
He already was.
He'll get the job done again.
So anyway, and also ROH can't really watch it. Not here anyway.
No, but if we do a wrestler spotlight on say maybe an indie wrestler.
Yeah, we will go back over some of their matches and point out some that you maybe should watch.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we'll get to that later on.
Yes.
Because we have some things to talk about first about, and this, again, this is mostly going to be focused on Raw, because that is the WWE's signature show, and we are a Signature Moves podcast.
Not a finishing move, so you can't really pin anyone after listening to this. You just kind of hope they, unless it's a jobber.
Maybe. Mm. Depends which jobber.
Yeah.
Alright, so first thing we need to talk about is the thing that's going to be pretty much headlining SummerSlam. I mean, even Cena and Punk and Big Show, and we'll get into that later, are taking a back seat to the major storyline, which is Triple H versus Brock Lesnar.
This is something I kind of want to say about Triple H. He's booking himself into the basically the main event, something that's going to essentially be the main event card on the or main event match on the card.
Okay. On one hand, I kind of agree with you. On the other hand, this is like one of the few matches when Brock Lesnar was in the WWE previously, 10 years ago, that never happened. Triple H versus Brock Lesnar never happened.
Right.
So it's a fresh matchup, which I very much appreciate. And even if it's Triple H trying to put himself at the top of the card, which very well might be likely, it's Triple H versus Brock Lesnar, a match we haven't seen before. So we really don't know how they're going to mesh, how it's going to work, and that really adds a level of intrigue to it.
Oh, no doubt. I am all over this match. I mean, yeah, I know probably the outcome of the match is going to be that Triple H goes over, maybe, if they don't want to continue the storyline or rely on Lesnar to continue his employment with the WWE. But, I mean, that sounds cynical and all, but I really want to see this match happen. It's two powerhouses going at it.
And that's certainly the way it goes if they kind of want to get rid of Brock Lesnar. I don't think they do, though. Because as bad as the drop-off was from WrestleMania Backlash, and we can't forget that, it was not as bad as, first of all, not this year's WrestleMania, but last year's WrestleMania. Didn't do so well. Because, The Rock returned, but it wasn't really anything exciting to watch. And then the backlash to it, it's still Backlash, right? They haven't changed that name yet?
I don't think it was Backlash last year. I think it was something else.
Oh, okay. Whatever the pay-per-view was after that WrestleMania, again, it didn't do that well. This year, it did a little better.
I would say so. I mean, they actually got The Rock and Cena, the match they've been waiting all year for to get on the stage, and it happened rather smoothly.
One of the safest matches you'll ever see.
Mm-hmm. If that was a match you wanted, a dream match of yours that you wanted to see, John Cena versus The Rock, you surely got your money's worth, you know, for the match.
Absolutely. And we'll get into that later, because I have some things to say about the current angle they're running, which you didn't see Raw, so you don't know which way they're going with this.
Yeah, I forgot yesterday was Monday.
It's okay. It happens, and, you know, you didn't have to suffer through 3 hours.
Alone. Fuck, it was 3 hours too, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I should buy you a teddy bear for that. I'm very sorry.
No. Don't buy me a teddy bear. I would rip its head off.
Maybe a get well card.
Buy me one of those punching dummies.
I know the perfect place to get one.
Okay. Anyway, so I forget the point I was trying to make. Backlash. Anyway, I remember. Now, this year's Backlash did not do a great number. Even though the main event was John Cena versus Brock Lesnar. Well, guess what? No one really wanted to see John Cena.
Not recently here.
You're taking the loser from the main event of WrestleMania, and then putting him in the main event again.
With
Brock Lesnar.
Which was at the time a very top draw.
He was a very top draw. and I think he still is very top draw.
Well, yeah.
It's just that nobody wanted to see that again. I mean, did Cena even reference that he got the FU from the fact that he was injured at the hands of Brock Lesnar?
I don't think that that was even brought up or grazed.
That you know, it was Brock Lesnar who made John Cena, basically?
That was such a long time ago.
The point is, Brock Lesnar is main eventing with basically Hulk Hogan in 1991. Nobody really wanted to see him in a wrestling ring anymore. He needed a break. John Cena needs a break. They aren't willing to give it to him, but they put who could potentially be one of their biggest draws against him and book him to lose. Because it's John Cena.
Well, yeah.
And he's the face of the WWE. And he's going to be until somebody realizes that they're losing money while he is.
But this all leads into the match that we're actually interested to see. The Triple H and Lesnar storyline feud.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully it's not a blow-off match. Hopefully it's...
Actually, I kind of want it to be a blow-off match.
Really?
Well, here's the rumor right now, is that Triple H, because he's not an active wrestler right now, because he does not need to retain any kind of heat or any kind of push, it's going to be Lesnar goes over Triple H. Be it Paul Heyman, be it Stephanie turning on him, be it just a clean Lesnar win. Triple H loses, which is good, because every sign I see has pointed to one match at WrestleMania. Brock Lesnar versus The Undertaker.
That is a that would be the definitive stepping stone match. Triple H fighting Lesnar and losing, Lesnar laying waste to the rest of the roster, which would eventually build into an Undertaker-esque, you know, promo segment leading into the newest WrestleMania of the year. But if we're going to talk about Lesnar versus Undertaker, do you think he would take the streak?
No. He can't take the streak. At this point, the streak has been built up so much that you can't just give it to anybody. You can't give it to Lesnar. Even if he was booked correctly, you couldn't give it to Cena.
They didn't even give it to Triple H, someone who I thought for sure was actually going to take it this year.
They were never going to give it to Triple H. Because Triple H understands what business... for all the internet complaints about Triple H, let's be fair. He understands that there are things that draw. One of those things is the Undertaker streak, and that draws. If you're going to remove it, you have to be damn sure that the Undertaker is not coming back for WrestleMania.
It has to be his absolute last WrestleMania wrestling match, wrestling-wise, ever.
If there were ever going to be a time, and I think it's not going to be this year, it's probably going to be next year for WrestleMania, for his 22nd WrestleMania win. It's going to be Cena versus The Undertaker. And somehow, this is my fantasy booking, by the way. Somehow, CM Punk gets the Money in the Bank briefcase. WrestleMania 30, actually. Wow, has it really been 30 years? Yeah.
So long.
Yeah. Anyway, WrestleMania 30. John Cena versus The Undertaker for the WWE Championship. Undertaker wins. He's celebrating. All of a sudden, here comes CM Punk. Cashes in, wins WWE Championship, breaks the streak. That's a program to go off of. Will the WWE do it? No.
They're so bent on booking everyone into oblivion.
Now, as we said, Lane didn't watch this week.
I had amnesia. It was temporary.
Yeah. So, what happened this Monday? Well, I'll tell you. CM Punk came out, and also to reiterate what happened on the Raw 1000. Basically, Raw came out while CM Punk and Daniel Bryan were there in the ring. Rock focused on Danielson, and this is a plot point, and pretty much ignored Punk. Rock came out when Punk and Cena were fighting for the title, while Big Show was interfering. Rock attacked Big Show. CM Punk attacked Rock. Oh, and by the way, something that I missed was that CM Punk gave The Rock the go to sleep.
I must have missed it too. I was probably still up and confused as to why they were trying to play him off as the heel.
Exactly. But they're showing it on the highlights. It actually is on video evidence. So
shit. I guess he has to be the heel now.
No. Because, well, yeah, they're trying to portray him as a heel. It's not working, but they're trying to portray him as a heel. So here's what happened this week. CM Punk comes out, and he, instead of just going to the ring and cutting a promo, takes off his title and sits in front of Jerry Lawler cross-legged.
What?
Yeah. You know how he sits cross-legged when he's shooting?
Yeah.
Like in the, before Money in the Bank, he was sitting cross-legged on the ramp. He sits on the announcer's table, and right in front of Jerry Lawler, and just starts, you know, talking, which made him even more of a babyface.
Because CM Punk talking in any form just gives him pops everywhere. And you gotta have your pops.
Yeah, and let's face it, Jerry Lawler has not been entertaining or a useful member of commentary since he came back in 2001.
He's just been
treading water.
There. That's it. He's just been there. Yeah. He hasn't been the king, you know, puppies, all that fun stuff. He's just been there and it shows.
Yeah. I mean, listen, Jerry Lawler is legitimately a wrestling legend. And no matter what I say about him, that will always remain. He is the greatest draw in Memphis. He's one of the greatest draws of all time. And you can check box office receipts and prove that. Jerry Lawler is legitimately a legend.
Oh, yeah. And nothing, no one is taking that away from him.
And he was even one of the greatest members of commentary in the Attitude Era.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was able to really cut loose and say what he thought. And I do believe to an extent he still believes everything he says. It's just the edge is gone.
He just seems like someone put a muzzle on him.
It's not even that he put a muzzle on him. It's that he muzzled himself. When he left in 2001... he is still very much the edgy commentator who would still side with the heels and occasionally with the baby faces, but he would always say what he really thought. Now, he's lost a lot as far as it comes to commentary. It's not even that he's stopped trying to be edgy, it's that he's lost a step.
So, what did CM Punk have to say about the King?
Well, he came out because the King said at the very end of Raw, apparently, which was not broadcast, by the way, because I was paying fucking attention, that CM Punk, after he delivered the go-to-sleep to The Rock, had turned on the WWE Universe. CM Punk came out to correct him, basically saying, no, I did not turn on the WWE Universe. I turned on The Rock, one single individual who is not any way, shape, or form representative of the WWE Universe, because he goes off and makes movies and then comes back and tries to steal the spotlight from me.
So what was the fan reaction to this revelation?
Thunderous applause.
And what did the commentators try to play this out as?
Oh, he's an egotistical jackass.
You're kidding.
It's almost like they don't understand their audience.
Yeah. He's right.
He is right. That's you, the thing.
You thunderous dolts. The Rock, as good as he is in the ring still to this day, goes off and films whatever Disney movie they can throw up at him, putting him in a tutu or whatever, films that bullshit, gets fans, money, cars, whatever, signs autographs, kiss babies, and when he feels like it, maybe he'll make a promo on the video screen and just send it by email, or if he's in town, he'll drive his candy ass over to the arena, show up, wave, rock bottom, or people's elbow some dude, and just walk his ass home collecting his paycheck on the way out.
Oh, that is so going into the intro.
I mean, I love The Rock when I was little, and I still love The Rock, and I love what he's done for the company. He is just sold the fuck out, though. He don't give a shit.
If there's nothing, let's get this out of the way. There's nothing wrong with selling out.
No, no,
especially
not.
If there's like 7 zeros after that.
Yeah, I can understand money's money.
So let's be fair. It's just the fact that he comes back and he acts like you weren't here, dude.
He acts like, oh, you guys are my fans and my family. You guys, I will never leave you again. Next night on Raw, he's not showing up. Night after that, he doesn't show up. The night after that, he doesn't show up again. And it goes on and on and on and on. That whole fucking WrestleMania build-up period, he gave us promos that were pre-recorded. Funny, but pre-recorded. He didn't bother to show his face, and when he did, he wrote his promo on his fucking arm. Still on his fucking arm.
Still bitter about that one, are we?
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to blow a fuse there.
No, go ahead, please.
But
CM
Punk is right, and the WWE writing these comments about him being a heel now, about him being trying to turn him heel through this, and after hearing the thunderous applause of him saying that The Rock's pretty much, you know, yeah, he's just there to collect his paycheck, it just goes to show what kind of television they write, that they think their fans are fucking stupid to eat this bullshit up. Like, it's, oh, CM Punk, he's the bad guy, obviously, because he hates The Rock. No! The Rock is making valid points! And you're gonna make him the villain. I don't care. You know, it doesn't matter. The fans are still gonna cheer him. And I'm still gonna cheer him. They're going to be behind them 100%. It doesn't matter. But, you know, this is going to lead to them forcing him to say something demeaning towards the fans to make them to get the cheap heat. It's going to happen.
And then they'll cheer him even more.
Yeah, I hope they'll cheer him. CM Punk. CM Punk is
let's face it. The fans recognize talent. And the WWE is in short supply. So, and it's especially true because what the WWE doesn't realize right now is that they are down to their hardcore fans. And their hardcore fans are very much wrestling fans. And the wrestling fans are the ones who are tuned into the indie scene. They're tuned into ROH. They're tuned into TNA even.
They know the Daniel Bryans. They know the Chris Heroes, the CM Punks.
They know the Austin Aries. They know the
Nigel McGuinnesses.
Exactly. The Samoa Joes.
All those.
Exactly. So they're going to cheer somebody who came up from nothing And let's be clear, CM Punk is very much as I like to say, he is the Macho Man Randy Savage of the new WWE. He's very much a Rocky Balboa story. And the WWE should treat him as such. He is somebody who came from nothing, who should never have had any kind of shot whatsoever. And he is at the top of the WWE.
He is the Cinderella story all people in the indie locker room look to and go, that could be me one day. That is my opening. This man right here is paving the way for me to actually get on television and show the world what I can do. And there's a lot of people in the Ring of Honor locker room and in the Pure Wrestling Guerrilla locker room and in maybe even in the in fucking the Japans, the Mexicos, the Canadians, all those,
even Shimmer.
Shimmer. They all look towards people like CM Punk, Austin Aries, Daniel Bryan, and they go, this is my shot. I can get in here. And they're going to have the balls to have CM Punk's character have an opinion that The Rock is not, you know, oh, God forbid, loyal to the company.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be the heel move they do for him? Good luck. Fucking good luck, guys.
They don't understand that their audience has diminished and they need to rebuild it. Vince kind of understands, which is why he's gone the PG image, but he doesn't really get it yet. And it's going to take Raw for 3 hours every single Monday for about 3 to 4 months before he finally gets that the ratings are going to drop off a fucking cliff.
It's already been slowing down to a decline, really. It's been declining for a while.
It's been slowing, but last week kind of helped prop it up again, so.
The 1,000th episode was kind of understandable. But they're going to use their fucking beer goggles on this, and they're going to be like, oh, we got a pop in the ratings. Let's bring back 3 hour thing.
More legends.
Oh, let's bring back more legends. Someone get Jake the Snake on the phone. Tell him we'll pay him in cocaine.
No, don't. God, don't do that. His heart will explode on the spot when he tries to do a DDT.
Jake, if you're listening to this podcast, which I highly hope you aren't, I'm sorry. I love you. And
well, if he's listening to this podcast, he's high already. So
okay, so watch out for the white rabbits.
Yeah, don't chase those.
Yeah.
So anyway,
is that all what happened with CM Punk that night?
Well, no, he went back on commentary versus Cena versus Big Show, which, by the way, main event last night was Big Show versus Cena. Winner would get a title shot at SummerSlam.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what happened?
Did Cena win?
No.
What?
Draw.
It was a... Oh my god, it was a draw.
It's almost like I predicted it 3 weeks ago. Cena versus Show versus Punk at SummerSlam for the WWE Championship.
Because he did. He totally called this like 3 weeks ago when this shitstorm started.
Wasn't hard to figure fucking out. I just paid attention to the fact that, you know, Show was still bothering Cena after Money in the Bank. And the fact that they ran a Twitter poll. Who should face The Rock at Royal Rumble? Punk, Cena, or Big Show?
That right there should have been the calling card for me going, hey, they're still trying to include Big Show, even though he's not doing anything at the moment.
Exactly. it's hard, people.
Well, I mean, I knew it was going to be John Cena and CM Punk. Obviously for SummerSlam. The moment I realized that they were gonna include Show is during the poll. Which, again, it was pretty much a big red flashy sign you have on there. It's like that's just duct taped onto the match card. They just put, and starring Big Show, you know. CM Punk versus John Cena featuring the Big Show.
So, the main event at SummerSlam Well, the second main event, because it's going to be Triple H Lesnar.
Yeah.
It's going to be Rock, or not Rock, Cena, Big Show, and CM Punk.
Which is essentially going to be a handicap match until they get Show out of the match.
Yeah. Well, no. But here's the thing. Here's what I really, really loved about Raw last night.
Mm-hmm.
During the Cena-Big Show match, there were, Cena and Big Show were on the outside. And you know that obvious spot where somebody whips somebody into somebody else in the commentary booth? And that's supposed to spark a feud?
Oh, no.
Yeah. Big Show whips Cena into CM Punk at commentary. And then they took the fight inside. And while Big Show was in control, CM Punk came out, came back in after, you know, taking this, after selling it, and attacked Big Show.
Oh my goodness.
It's almost like, as you put it, he's genre aware.
He is genre savvy. It's just, there you go. He knows the people are going to watch and like, oh, he's going to attack Big Show now, or he's going to attack Cena now. No, he's like, I'm aware of this.
I have common sense. I know what happens. I pay attention. Thank you so much, CM Punk.
It's almost as if, you know, everyone else in the WWE is fucking retarded, while CM Punk is the only straight man. Seriously, that's what it's like.
Well, considering how much he dates the WWE divas, I can see that.
It's like everyone is filled with gets a water bottle every Raw with a dosage of crazy pills in the water. CM Punk just decides to bring his own water because he's the only smart motherfucker there.
Everyone gets a shot of tequila with Rohypnol.
That's why he's straight edge and better than you.
Exactly. Okay, so, anyway, thoughts on Cena, Punk, Big Show? Watchable? Yeah. I guess?
Yeah. It's a triple threat match. You did something I don't get to see, you don't get to see very often.
You can see it all the time. What are you talking about?
No, not with these main event guys like this. Okay. Not with
Cena, Punk, and Big Show. This is kind of the first time it's happened. Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's. I didn't mean like that. I mean you get to see lower mid card or mid card guys do three way dances all the time, but it's. Yeah, Punk, Cena, and Show. Even though Show's probably not going to be the one carrying the match, more than likely it's not going to be Cena either. It's still going to be hopefully entertaining.
Calling everything, yeah.
I don't know how he's going to carry a 300-ton fucking giant, but that's Punk for you.
He's done it before.
But now he's got, like, an added 150 pounds.
Here's the thing. Cena actually isn't bad.
No, I wasn't.
That's the thing. People forget. Cena is not bad. Cena fucking carried the Great Khali kicking and screaming to a good match in 2007. He still has some of those skills available to him. Kicking and screaming. He is one of two people who had a good match with the Great Khali.
Two.
The other person, by the way, is Batista.
Wang, guess where he is?
Well, he's currently training for an MMA match, so.
Oh, okay. So what do you think about who's going to come out of the CM Punk Cena show match on top?
I don't know. The rumors backstage right now are that Triple H wants the longest title reigns possible for each individual champion. And we'll get to Sheamus in just a little bit. It's coming up, folks. Just wait for it.
Yeah.
But right now,
we got a couple other things.
But they keep announcing, you know, how many days and weeks it'll take for CM Punk to pass the next benchmark.
in my eyes, the best possible outcome for this match mm-hmm. is that Punk wins and goes on the face into a feud with The Rock.
Here's the thing. I want them to build to Rock Punk because the other option for Punk isn't going to happen. As much as I would love it to, it's not going to happen.
What's the other option you see?
It's the one Punk has been wanting for years.
Oh, no, it's not going to happen, Punk Austin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. Austin, his neck is never going to be right.
He shouldn't even be training wrestlers mm-hmm. at his condition.
Exactly.
Unless he's, like, sitting down.
He can't take bumps, people.
That's why they had fucking Hugh Morris and most
Booker
of the...
Booker T.
And Booker T to do most of the work for him in that show.
Best possible outcome is Punk Cena, because that would draw. Stone Cold Steve Austin's first match in... What? Since WrestleMania 19. So it's been 10 years.
Yeah. We could go for another, like, monumental feud that wasn't John Cena, Randy Orton.
We'll talk about Randy Orton in a little bit.
And poor Big Show. He's getting the short end of the stick for being such a big fella.
Yeah, well, let's be fair. Big Show has done really, really well for himself.
Oh, yeah.
He stuck around way too long, but he was very much instrumental in making WrestleMania, was 24? With
Which
him
one?
Mayweather?
Oh, yeah, that whole debacle.
That was brilliant. That was him taking something real and making an angle. And that showed you just how much talent Big Show had. They have squandered it beyond all hell, but Big Show had talent to take getting his fucking nose broken.
Legit. Yeah.
And turning it into an angle. Anyway, we are going way off topic here.
We're staying within the perimeters of the three involved, but we need to move on towards...
Yes, because we got other things to talk about.
We're going toward Mongoose McQueen and the Mr. Ziggles feud.
Yeah. Okay, so let's recap real quick. Jericho doesn't like Dolph Ziggler.
Dolph Ziggler still remembers his name, but he chooses not to let everyone else know he remembers his name by telling people, hi, he's Dolph Ziggler.
Really? He does that?
No, he did that.
Oh.
He has to keep it in check mentally now, because it used to be just a trigger reflex back when he first started out.
See, I wasn't watching, because it irritated the fuck out of me. And also, he was a member of the Spirit Squad, so I couldn't take him seriously.
Yeah, but that's probably obscure, and none of these people have heard of him.
Dolph Ziggler versus Chris Jericho. I mean, Jericho's gotten the better of Dolph Ziggler a couple of times.
If we were to put this into any better words, it might come out sounding something like a Snidely Whiplash cartoon.
No.
Whereas Dolph Ziggler would be just twirling his mustache at the end.
Yeah, because Snidely Whiplash never won at the end of the cartoons, and this is one of those things where Ziggler's going to go over.
Well, yeah, but you don't tell that to the kids watching...
Snidely Whiplash never went over. It is a Hanna-Barbera cartoon, dude.
Yeah, they didn't know how to write wrestling anyway.
No, it was animation,
which you might
want to have told to the 1980s, and the Hulk Hogan's Rock and Wrestling Connection cartoon. I had to reach for that one, but fuck it, I made it anyway.
Oh god, that cartoon
is terrible.
They told me to get down, so I get down.
Every single episode.
Didn't that have Mr. T in it too?
Maybe. I can't remember anymore. Dude, it came out in, like, 1983. My memory was just developing.
It was either Mr. T or Coco Beware. We're getting off topic.
Coco Beware was in that. Yes, I remember him.
fucking Dolph Ziggler, Jericho, and we go all the way back to the 84 the fucking
it's so
Hulk
obvious
cartoon.
That we have to talk about 80s cartoons because there's nothing else to talk about. Ziggler goes over Jericho to build him to a world title championship. Next match.
Next match. All I have written down for the next match is a guy's name.
Oh, yeah. We'll get to that in a second. Let me go ahead and get to Alberto Del Rio versus Sheamus.
Ooh.
Yeah, because this is apparently the world title match at SummerSlam.
Why? What? Wait, what?
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Yeah, because Sheamus is working out with Triple H.
Why?
Because that gets him a push.
Oh, yeah, because he has to spot Triple H when they're doing the lifts and whatnot.
The reps, yeah.
So he does get a push.
Yep. So, yeah, Sheamus versus Alberto Del Rio again. I don't know why.
Say it again.
Again. Yeah, so anyway, Alberto Del Rio versus Sheamus. It's going to happen again. Hopefully they add Rey Mysterio or something to it.
What's Ray Ray gonna do running out there being the face and interrupting a match?
Be cheered. Because it's sure not what either Alberto Del Rio or Sheamus are doing.
This is... I don't think you grasp the magnitude that this match has to happen. A clean victory, you see, because this is...
It had a clean victory last time!
Obviously, it was a very good potty break. People had to go and take shit or piss, whatever.
Apparently a shit, get food. It was like over 15 minutes.
The match sucked.
The match sucked. I wish I could forget it. Negative 5 stars! Actually, I'm kidding. It's
minus 5 stars.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a 3-star match from Money in the Bank, but it should not be fucking happening again. Even with a stipulation, we got a clean finish. It shouldn't be happening again.
I'll probably snuggle up with my pillow when that match is happening so I can rest well for the rest of the pay-per-view.
Exactly.
Hopefully it's not the curtain jerker match, or hopefully it is, actually.
Actually, it'll probably be the curtain jerker.
Good, because if it's the main event, I'm going to shit 20 chickens.
Well, let's be fair. I mean, Sheamus, not exactly known for his tan. Where are they going? Los Angeles. It's the curtain jerker. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised. I might be. If it's not the first match, it'll probably be the second. But there's a very, very real off chance that it'll be, like, free for view on the internet. SummerSlam preview.
That'd be nice, actually. That way we wouldn't have to, you know, those of us paying for the pay-per-view wouldn't have to pay money to see this.
Yeah. Okay. So, moving on. You only have one name in that note, don't you?
I just wrote down a name. I don't want to say it just yet because I want you to do it.
So, during Raw 1001, one of the things that happened was a commercial break happened. There are commercials. And after that, out came, what are they called? The dinosauruses?
Funkosauruses? I don't know. The women?
The dancers for Brodus Clay. Yeah, so he did his thing. You know, came
Fat
out.
Fat Ernest Miller.
Yeah, he did Ernest Miller, except not as good, because Ernest Miller is a good dancer.
One of the good things he did do, besides a good super kick.
Anyway, after the Funkosaurus did his thing, and I feel so dirty saying that. Damian Sandow.
Now, George, you're going to have to enlighten me, my friend. Who is Damian Sandow?
That's a very good question. Apparently, he is the intellectual savior of the WWE. Now, this being said, this is a gimmick that has been done before. many times. And the person who perfected it was Lanny Poffo, a.k.a. the Genius, a.k.a. the brother of Macho Man Randy Savage.
Not the cousin or the uncle.
There's really only two people he could be related to with the last name Poffo in the wrestling business. Either the father or the brother. So Damian Sandow comes out and says, I'm the intellectual savior of the WWE. I'm going to save you from what this bullshit is transpiring in this ring. And he comes in the ring and he beats the ever-living shit out of Brodus Clay.
What? Wait. I'm out. Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay, now, we're talking about Brodus Clay, the Funkasaurus, right?
Yes.
And we're talking about how I fell asleep through this Raw, or I just missed it, right?
Right.
Brodus Clay, the guy who has the current streak of just squash matches right now.
Uh-huh.
And Damian Sandow, this guy from SmackDown, mm-hmm. saunters his intellectual ass out and puts the hurtin' on Brodus the Velociraptor Clay?
The Funkasaurus, but
the
yes.
Funkasaurus?
Yes. That is exactly what happened, because here's why. Damian Sandow channeled the spirit of Dan Spivey. I don't know if he's dead yet, so... But anyway, Dan Spivey once portrayed a character named Waylon Mercy, which is based on a character from Cape Fear named Max. I don't know his last name. I've never seen either Cape Fear movie. But anyway, the point of Waylon Mercy was very calm when he comes to the ring. Gets in the ring, and he says he loves all the people. He loves his opponent. He loves the referee. He loves the announcers. And then the bell rings, and he fucking tears into them. And then he puts them down, and he cheats his shit. He's an obvious heel. And then he gets the pin, bell rings, and then he's calm as shit.
That's a motherfucker I want on my side.
Dan Spivey played this perfectly, and it's a shame that it took such a toll on him, because he could have been such a superstar. A real superstar with this. He could have competed with his former tag team partner Sid for the World Championship. He could have competed with The Undertaker, his other former tag team partner for the World Championship. I'm mentioning skyscrapers a lot. I should stop.
Ooh.
That's obscure.
I got that one. That one wasn't over my head. Me and Mark Callis.
Yes. So anyway, that was the point. Damian Sandow became, either how you look at it, Waylon Mercy or fucking Hannibal Lecter, except without the blood and the skinning and the cannibalism. So probably more Waylon Mercy.
So he comes out and beats the living shit out of Brodus Clay. Pins him, beats him. Was it a squash match?
No, it was not a match at all. It was just a beatdown.
This guy beat down Brodus Clay.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? This is going to sound very, very contradictory to what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
But I like this.
No, here's the thing. Initially, I liked it. Because when Damian Sandow, who supposedly intellectual savior of the WWE, started going after Brodus Clay, he went after the leg. Which is like, that makes sense. That's brilliant. And then he stopped. And then I was like, that's less brilliant.
So he went for the leg first, like he's actually playing his character off as a smart dude.
Uh-huh. And then he went for the midsection and the head.
Why?
Because in reality, this is still one of the dumbasses who challenged Kendrick in London for the tag team championships and lost.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I see why you want to talk about him now. It was just an enigma.
It was one of those things where I was like, yes! No!
I could get behind you. Oh, no, I can't.
No, you're still an idiot.
Yeah. Oh, Damian Sandow. Let's hope though there's good things coming from this guy, because we do need some new heels.
We do. It's just, well, we're not going to get it from Heath Slater, apparently.
Obviously not.
Well, we need to mention this real quick, because last night, also, you didn't watch this.
No, I know, but I've heard.
Yeah, Heath Slater came out and said, well, it's after Raw 1000, I don't need to worry about the Legends. I'll challenge anybody in the WWE locker room for a match, and I'll win, because I'm the one-man band, and out comes Randy Orton, and you can hear what happened next. So, Randy Orton comes out, he gets a little beat down by Heath Slater, and then he hits all his signature moves, except for the punt, because that's a heel move.
Apparently.
Yeah. And Heath Slater is a jobber to the stars. But anyway, Randy Orton is off his suspension and back. Shame, you know, he didn't get caught for drugs a week earlier.
Yeah. He's back, but for how long?
Until he fails his next drug test. Then I'll be for 90 days.
Yeah, that seems like a very good frame of time.
Yeah, let's be honest here. Randy Orton is not exactly...
I-E-D.
So many abandoned storylines.
Oh my god. So yeah, he's back.
Yeah, he's back. He's still a face. And we'll see what he does from here. I imagine he'll, like, interject himself into the Sheamus Alberto Del Rio feud.
If you would like to call it a feud.
Actually, that one I would call a feud.
Oh, okay.
It's not a great feud, but at least it's between two individuals.
Which constitutes something...
And it's happened for over a month or so, so yeah, it's a feud.
Okay.
And there is a point to it. So, I'm not sure WWE realizes the point, but there is a point to it.
I'm not sure I realize it either.
Fair enough. All right, but moving on. Various news and notes. John Laurinaitis has resigned officially as the head of talent relations for the WWE.
We wish him best of luck in his future endeavors.
Except his future endeavors include producing backstage at the WWE events, because he hasn't been really fired.
Fuck him, then.
Yeah, his duties pretty much have been taken over by various other individuals, most notably Triple H.
Well, that was going to happen anyway soon.
Right. Basically, Triple H is head of talent relations right now. Payroll is pretty much what he was doing for the last few months until somebody else got trained up. WWE hasn't said who, but basically, John Laurinaitis, the man who hired the wrong one-legged man, has finally resigned.
He hired Zach Gowen.
He hired Zach Gowen, the wrong one-legged man.
Who was the right one?
Actually, it was Zach Gowen.
Oh, yeah. Right one.
And then, I don't know who the wrong one was. But the man has hired people... The man hired Kelly Kelly, fuck's sake.
To be fair,
yeah.
Okay. Zach Gowen does have one leg.
Zach Gowen does, in fact, have one leg.
John Laurinaitis quit, gave us Kelly Kelly and Zach Gowen, among many others.
To be fair, he's also signed most of the talent that's currently in the WWE, so...
Not a bad track record. We're probably not going to miss him on television.
No. In fact, we welcome the fact that we will never see him on television again, and we will probably see his son more... Then we see him, so... Or not his son, his nephew. Nephew, is what I was meant to say.
Right.
Who is a linebacker with the St. Louis Rams.
So, oh, he's going definitely to wrestling, then.
Well, he's actually one of the better linebackers, so he might... It might take a while. And to be fair, the Rams suck, so...
That's why I said it wouldn't be that long.
No, it'll take a while because the Rams won't want to lose that talent.
Oh, okay.
Other various news and notes. Anything else you want to mention, Lane?
I don't want to mention it, but I think it needs mentioning. If no one here is familiar with the rap group, the Insane Clown Posse, good. If you are familiar with said rap slash clown group...
Fucking magnets? How do they work?
Yeah, fucking magnets. It is a group put together by two individuals from Detroit, Michigan, dressed up as clowns, rapping about magnets and various other things clown and evil related.
Let me put this in a wrestling perspective real quick. Insane Clowns Posse has been around since '90s, late '90s, mm-hmm. I think. I had a friend who was a juggalo. He has since been reformed. He is now a contributing member to society.
As am I.
He's about the same age as me, so I'm just saying there's hope for you people who still listen to it.
Yeah.
Insane Clown Posse has also had dealings in wrestling.
WCW and WWE. WWF.
Yes. If you ever want to go back and listen to... I don't know why you would, but Insane Clown Posse did entrance themes for the... Oh, fuck, what were they called?
The Oddities.
The Oddities, yes.
They were a group of misfits, a stable of the Attitude Era, that came out to... the Insane Clown Posse's entrance theme, which also they usually came out with the Insane Clown Posse in the beginning.
And that group included Earthquake and Kurgan and Luna Vachon.
Earthquake.
Yeah. People forget he was a big deal in 1990, don't they?
Yeah.
He kind of almost crippled Hulk Hogan.
I didn't know it was Earthquake.
Yeah, Earthquake. 1990 came out and squashed Hulk Hogan with the Earthquake Splash.
Now I feel bad.
And then, you know, people promptly forgot about him. Because before that, he was the Canadian Earthquake. And, you know, wrestlers from Canada apparently don't exist for long in WWE.
Anyway, the point of this is, and how this is all wrestling-related, pertaining to the Insane Clown Posse...
Anyway, Insane Clown Posse has had its hands in wrestling for quite a while, including the... what is it called? The
JCW, Juggalo Championship Wrestling.
And they actually host an annual get-together, which actually, I know for a fact, includes some pretty big names. And
mm-hmm.
Hogan's been there. Flair is going to be there this year. Hall, Nash.
All of these reluctant signees.
Basically, they have enough money to pay these reluctant signees their money. I'm not sure if they've had Austin yet.
They've had Mick Foley, though.
Well, yeah. Well, to be fair...
Mick Foley was in their movie, so...
Yeah. Despite what I think of them... What I think of how they're leading their group, how I think the ultimate goal is for their fandom, they're one of the few independents that, despite running so few shows, actually has a committed audience, and B, a continuing audience, because they keep bringing back the stars they were promised.
Yeah. All this doesn't really matter for what I'm about to say and why they're being brought up right now in our wrestling news, because it's kind of slanderous. The Insane Clown Posse. The Insane Clown Posse is coming out with a new album called The Mighty Death Pop, August 14th. One of the tracks has been released for the album, and I'm sure most of you wrestling fans have heard it by now, and if not, you should probably go hear it just once.
I haven't heard about it. What's it called?
The name of the track is Chris Benoit.
You heard the facepalm, right?
That was the facepalm heard around the world. Hopefully, when this gets broadcast, I hear many more. That's not even the worst part.
Oh.
Yeah.
Dear God, what's...
It gets...
I can't even imagine what the fucking worst part is.
It gets worse. The song itself is basically about a descent into madness. A person's, not specific, anyone in specific, quote-unquote, a person who has a lot of emotional, disturbed emotions in them. The lyrical content basically describes the madness, not really in detail, but in as much detail as the Insane Clown Posse can put in a lyrical song. However, they tack on at the end, before they start the chorus, "And now I'm Chris Benoit," as if they're saying, "All this madness inside of me, da-da-da, and because of it, now I'm Chris Benoit." Not only that, but during the chorus, they add little hints of calling, of saying the Crippler, and over again, like during the chorus in the background. And they have the balls to fake a Chris Benoit promo at the end of the song.
What?
A small, short Chris Benoit promo at the end of the song.
What?
Yeah, I'm not joking. I will read it to you.
Don't. Because it's not even worth... Let me put it this way. I'm not even going to link to it. Because this is... It's not stupid. It's disrespectful on a level I have never encountered before. This is stupid purely on a level of... I don't understand what social interaction is. This is... Chris Benoit is one of the greatest black eyes of the wrestling industry, only because he went insane and murdered his wife and child. This is legitimately something that happened in, what, 2007?
It was fairly recent, although probably...
I wanted to say 2005, but that wasn't... No, that wouldn't have been nearly... close enough.
I'd say it was 2007. It probably was 2007. If you can correct us, email us and correct us.
Chris Benoit was on his way to a Hall of Fame career, and not even just WWE Hall of Fame, the pro wrestling industry Hall of Fame, the one that actually has a Hall of Fame. He had a legitimate career. He was one of the most admired and respected people in the industry, because of his work ethic, because of his... No, just because of his work ethic. Just because of the fact that anything he did, he tried to perfect. And he did it so well that he made other people better. Chris Benoit had been one of the best feel-good stories wrestling had ever produced. And in a matter of 48 hours, he had pissed it all away because he went insane. And for the Insane Clown Posse, these douchebags in makeup, to say anything about him when they fucking laughed at a dead guy on their stage is bullshit. A guy died on their stage when they were first starting out, and they want to mention Chris Benoit? They want to bring... And they're paying wrestlers to appear at their shows. No.
I want to be clear about something. Mm. I'm going over the lyrical content again. I'm reading it. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't seem as derogatory as it sounds, because when I was listening to it, it's fairly easy from the tone and the beat that it is that it sounded kind of like dark and evil and gritty, when in fact I think the swing they're trying to put on it is basically that people have a lot of shit built up inside of them, and saying that, I guess what they're trying to express is that the pain and the anguish and the pressure that bursts, the lyrical content, the pain explodes, the pressure bursts, I drop the wheel, heading for the worst, I'm Chris Benoit, you know. It doesn't seem so much in my observation that they're saying Chris Benoit is bad or that they're trying to sully his good name. However,
that's not what I was saying at all.
It's in very bad taste.
No, that's what I'm saying.
To do this, to do a song.
Here, let me put it this way. The night it was announced on Raw that Chris Benoit died, I was crying that entire evening. Because Chris Benoit was number two on my list. Bret Hart was number one. Chris Benoit was number two on my favorite wrestler of all time. And it was because they worked their asses off to get there. And I love that. I love the fact that they weren't the guys who were supposed to be there. They were the guys who, in spite of everything, worked their asses off to get where they were. So I cried my ass off that evening.
Me too.
And then started hearing what happened. And you started hearing that maybe he killed his wife, maybe he killed his son, and then it started getting confirmed that, yeah, he killed his wife and he killed his son. And it was the most emotional whiplash one can get. From love to absolute loathing. Not even hate, just loathing.
I was confused. My take on it, I didn't understand it. Maybe because I'm too young to understand. Yeah, I mean, I'm 22, but at the time, I was a little bit younger. Maybe I was a little bit too naive to understand that people in the world can hide problems behind a very thick shell and walk around like there's nothing wrong in the world. They could go about their work, and then one day, all it takes is one bad day, and it just... The song, if you listen to it, it could have worked without them tacking Chris Benoit's name on it. It just really... They really shouldn't have done it. Mm-hmm. But they
but
did.
That's how they're going to sell albums.
That's how they're going to sell it. Yeah, they're going to... It's going to be shock value.
Yeah, and that's my point. They're using his name for shock value to sell an album. And my point is, you shouldn't use his name in any way, shape, or form. WWE, who has a legitimate claim to using his name because they own the WCW library, they own the ECW library, they own the WWE library. They pretty much own his entire career except for New Japan. Or was he in New Japan or All Japan?
I think it's All Japan now.
Okay. That's pretty much his entire career. And they had a right for the footage to it. They choose not to use it because of what happened and out of respect for their families. At any time they choose to use that footage, it's purely in a historical context. Which is exactly what it needs to be, historical context. Because any legacy Chris Benoit had, he ruined with what he did. It's the very same way Ken Patera ruined his career by assaulting, I believe it was sheriff's deputy. It's one of the old, it's really one of the more famous wrestling stories. And even then, he had a legitimate reason. Well, not legitimate. He had a reason. It wasn't legitimate. But, I mean, the manager in the McDonald's was pissing him off. Teasing him.
He didn't kill anyone.
He did not kill anyone. He served prison time, but he did not kill anyone. Meanwhile, Chris Benoit killed himself and two other people. He killed himself, probably because he felt extremely guilty, but also to avoid prison time. You can't excuse him.
No, you really can't. And it's sad. It's sad that a legacy such as good as his is being...
That was one of the happiest moments of my life, was watching a web stream of WrestleMania 20, and the end of the match between him and Triple H and Shawn Michaels.
Mm-hmm.
And watching someone scream, "Tap, you hook-nosed bitch," to Triple H.
Eddie Guerrero came out after the match that night.
Yeah, and you had the two friends, these two brothers in arms, embrace. at the end of the anniversary of WrestleMania, the biggest one at the time, the biggest anniversary of WrestleMania, and then now you can't really show it.
You're not allowed to talk about him. You're not allowed to know about him. New fans will never know who Chris Benoit is unless they look up the police reports to find out he was just a murderer.
I guess if they find their dad or mom, and I'm not going to be gender specific here, dad or mom's old wrestling collection DVDs.
Brother?
Look at...
It's like brothers... mothers, fathers, older wrestling fans, people who want to know about Chris Benoit and don't, it's your duty to, not really duty to, but you should really, don't fucking tell them he was a murderer and focus on that.
Yeah.
Just give them the legacy of what you can find on him.
If you want to focus on a legacy of someone who's passed away, there's a match with Chris Benoit and Bret Hart in Kansas City, Missouri. For the memory of Owen Hart.
Oh, yeah.
In WCW. That was a fantastic match, and that's exactly what wrestling should be. It should be emotional. It should mean something. And it should be something you remember for the rest of your life.
You okay, George? You sound a little teary-eyed there, man.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, I'm a little... Man, anything Chris Benoit, it just hardens. You gotta harden our heart, though, because we're moving into the last segment of the show.
Yeah, well, we got a couple segments, actually.
Oh, we do?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We have now our signature move, Wrestler Spotlight. Da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da.
Thank you, I know. We do rock.
Anyway, Lane, who is our Wrestler Spotlight going to focus on this week?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, the Wrestling Spotlight is shining brightly upon one of my friend George's favorite wrestlers. A man he can talk endless hours about and just love on him. And, well, not
and
that last bit.
Frequently has.
And frequently has throughout this podcast, believe it or not.
Yeah. Most of it will be edited out, but still. Be aware, in the three tries we've had in this podcast, I have spoken endlessly about the superstar. So, Lane, who is it?
Ladies and gentlemen, we are talking none other than Bret the Hitman Hart.
The best there is, the best there was, the best there ever will be. The Hitman, Bret Hart.
Oh, man, Bret Hart. Oh, he, a Canadian-born wrestler. A Canadian wrestler. It's just, he's... I mean, I can't really put it into words. I honestly, I like Bret Hart. He's not my favorite wrestler, but he has to be one of the best people out there with a good work ethic, good moral standings, with skills back in the day, and still to this day a little bit, maybe. Well, not so much this day, but he still can be charismatic, and he can still be the Hitman.
Okay, so let me fill people in on Bret Hart real quick. And believe me, I'm going to try and keep this quick. Second-generation wrestler, born to Stu Hart, one of, I believe, 11 children, the second to youngest, the youngest male being Owen. And believe me, that'll be a wrestler spotlight someday.
Yes, it will be.
Bret Hart excelled in amateur wrestling and was pretty much pushed into professional wrestling and amateur wrestling by his father, trying to win his father's approval. And by the way, pretty much all this information comes from his biography, which you can pick up at any... Actually, I'll just say, Google it on Amazon. It's still there.
Mm-hmm.
I was about to say any bookstore, but then I had a laugh at myself. Stu Hart also started a promotion called Stampede Wrestling, based out of Calgary, Alberta, Canada, which toured all over Canada, and was pretty much one of the biggest promotions there. And the reason I know this is Andre went there. Andre the Giant was one of the people, one of the major athletes who would often go to Canada and wrestle for Stu Hart. And Brett tried to prove he was an athlete on many an occasion, and that ended up getting him into wrestling. Brett, at his heart, and I realize the irony of saying that, at his heart, he was an artist. And this shows in his wrestling. Here's the thing. For those of you who think wrestling is a science, that there's, you know, step one, step two, step three, step four, step five, you're wrong. Great wrestling is an art form. It has to come from the art, or the heart.
Quite literally.
It has to come from the moment.
And seeing as how your heart's a part of your respiratory system.
Yeah, that too. Anyway. Bret Hart is one of the signature artists of wrestling. And you can tell because he has had great matches with literally people who no one else could have a good match with. Think about a Bad News Brown match. Roddy Piper couldn't have a good match with Bad News Brown. Bret Hart did. Bret Hart had several good matches. Bad News Brown. Think about Psycho Sid, or Sid Vicious, or whatever you want to call him. Of the four people who have had a good match with him, one of them is Bret Hart. Kevin Nash has had three good matches in his life, and the names of his opponents who had those good matches were Shawn Michaels, Mark Calloway, and Bret Hart. Are you sensing a theme?
Slightly. But do go on.
Bret Hart is one of those people you actually could have wrestle a broom and still have a watchable match out of. Bret Hart was his generation's Ric Flair. The problem being, nobody remembers, Ric Flair was always, as a draw, second fiddle to Hogan. And unfortunately, there was no Hogan when Bret Hart was drawing. That being said, he had one of the most stellar careers that was organically built. And it's something you don't see in the WWE these days. It was an organically built career. He was a tag team member for 84 to 1990. So, 6 years.
It's a good long...
I mean, he was a member of a tag team that long. And then he got his singles push.
A tag team that won the championships twice.
Twice. In an era where that meant something.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just like, you know, Miz and Morrison win the titles 1 week, lose it to... I don't know who they lose it to. Nexus.
Yeah, it was Nexus.
It was an era when Vince McMahon took tag team wrestling semi-seriously. It wasn't completely serious, because, let's be honest, he never took tag team wrestling serious.
No, but look at his single records. His singles records. WCW United States Heavyweight Champion, WCW World Heavyweight Champion, WWE United States Champion, WWF Champion, Intercontinental Champion. He was the WWF Champion 5 times, King of the Ring winner twice, Royal Rumble winner of 1994.
First of all, let me correct you on some things. Co-Royal Rumble winner in 1994.
Oh, yeah.
It was him and Lex Luger. They eliminated each other at the same time. And it was actually kind of brilliant that he was able to do it and make it look like they were both eliminated at the same time. At the end of the day, it was going towards WrestleMania 10. Vince McMahon recognized that Lex Luger wasn't getting the reaction that he wanted him to. So the winner of the coin flip, the next Raw, was Lex Luger. He got to face Yokozuna first. The person who got to face Yokozuna last was Bret Hart, in which he won the WWE Championship again. Now, Bret Hart was the first Triple Crown winner. Tag Team Champion, Intercontinental Champion, WWE Champion. He was also the first Dual Championship winner. He won two Tag Team Championships. He won two Tag Team Championships. He won two Intercontinental Championships. And then he won two World Championships. He was the reason the Triple Crown was invented. And when people talk about the Triple Crown, especially with The Miz, it's because of Bret Hart. He was the first wrestler to win five WWE Championships since Hogan. Hogan was the first. Let's not mince words. Hogan was the first. Bret Hart was probably the best. And the only reason I say that, above Austin, above Rock, above anything else, his championships mattered.
He came from a time when he won them that they still had value to them, and they weren't just passed out like good report cards or something.
Exactly. That being said, there are some strikes against Bret Hart. And they mostly are attributed to his backstage activity. Bret Hart takes himself way too fucking seriously.
No nonsense. The dude is... If you want Stifler or Stickler, you know, look no further.
Not Stifler, really, because he doesn't drink his own cum. But... Or someone else's cum. At least as far as I know.
I never saw that movie. I don't plan to.
Anyway, American Pie reference aside...
Yes.
Bret Hart is very much conscious of how he is viewed in wrestling history. That being said, he takes it way too fucking seriously. He is very much defensive about his legacy. And to be fair, considering all his family has sacrificed for that legacy, I don't really blame him that much.
No, I mean, he comes from a generational line of bred wrestlers. He is a bred wrestler.
Exactly. And I guess we gotta bring it up a little bit, but major parts of his family have died for the business. So...
very much so for the business. One in particular that seems to be stand out among the rest is Owen Hart, his brother.
Owen Hart. I mean, he's... Owen Hart. What else can you say about... We'll have a wrestler spotlight on him.
Well, we'll talk about him at a later date, but... I mean, the point of the matter was, Bret Hart is... He's got a lot to lose, and, you know, if they were to book him to come out in a chicken outfit, you know...
He wouldn't do it.
He wouldn't do it.
He's one of the few with integrity. And that's the point of Bret Hart, is that he has the integrity to say, no, I'm not going to do that.
It's not arrogance. It's
knowing your legacy... And not only protecting it, but protecting the legacy of the rest of the athletes in wrestling, period. WWE, TNA, ROH, whatever. It's knowing that you don't have to do this to be a success. You just have to work at it.
Which is why Bret Hart is a very, very integral part of very big controversy. His no-nonsense actions had, in my opinion, a very high cost, if you will, during the end of his WWF run when he started feuding with the ever-popular ladies' man and, you know, drug...
And gay man, too.
And gay man Shawn Michaels.
Well, let's mention the Playgirl cover real quick.
If we do, I might lose my shit. Okay, we may have to skip over that.
Okay.
He did a Playgirl cover. Yeah. Naked. I liked it.
Was he actually fully naked, or
he had,
was he covering his bits with the WWE Championship?
I've only seen that picture.
Anyway, yeah. So, Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels. It's one of the... actually, if you go to WWE.com, you could look up the greatest rivalries of the WWE. And number one is Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels, with good reason. It's a blood feud that, while it took over the backstage, it was also presented on screen. And it drew huge numbers. It helped catapult WWE back into the spotlight versus WCW. People forget that while WCW was, you know, on the 84 weeks.
Yeah, 84 weeks.
I thought it was 82. 84-week win streak. It wasn't like WWE was tanking all the time. They were presenting good shows, and they were building up each and every week, while WCW's rating was pretty much staying consistent. WWE's ratings kept building up over time, and it was because of Bret Hart versus Stone Cold Steve Austin. By the way, the reason we have Stone Cold Steve Austin is because of Bret Hart.
Yeah, it's another thing we need to...
Yeah, we need to point out that the WWE's integral success during the Attitude Era was because Bret Hart said, "I want to feud with Stone Cold Steve Austin," before he was Stone Cold.
And boom.
Yeah.
There it went.
It was, "When I come back, I want to feud with Stone Cold. I want to make him a star." And lo and behold, Bret Hart made him a star.
He made him famous, for lack of a better promo reference.
Oh.
But that's another story for another day. We're on Bret Hart.
Anyway, Bret Hart made a lot of people famous because we're going way too long on the guy. I love him, but we're going way too long right now.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes down to Bret Hart, how do you view the guy? I mean, on the one hand, we had the Hart Foundation, which helped establish the Attitude Era, whether he liked it or not, and most indication is he didn't. On the other hand, we had the integral babyface, who, in spite of Congress, in spite of failing business, helped keep the WWE on its feet. And let's be honest, he really did. If it wasn't for Bret Hart, the WWE would not exist right now.
Most definitely.
Yeah, Ted Turner would have bought it years ago.
Bret Hart was a top draw, but...
But when it comes to Bret Hart, how do we encapsulate his career? I have a way, and it's called the signature move match of the bye week.
We'll just call it the signature move match spotlight. Right?
It doesn't really work.
No.
Signature move. Let's remove the signature move part. Match of the podcast.
Yes.
Match you should check out.
Match of the...
There we go.
Match of the episode?
Match of the episode.
Yes.
Basically, the match you should check out, because it's really, really awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, this week I will choose, and this week I choose a Bret Hart match. In fact, I choose the match that made me a wrestling fan. That match is from SummerSlam, 1991. It is Bret Hart, the challenger, versus Mr. Perfect, Curt Hennig, the Intercontinental Champion, with the coach on the outside for the Intercontinental Championship.
See, this is a match myself I have yet to watch because I was born in 1990, and it takes me a while to view and watch vintage matches like this, so hopefully I'm in for a very good surprise here, seeing as I loved Curt Hennig in WCW, and I like Bret Hart.
Yeah. Well, this is Curt Hennig before he was injured to all hell.
Right.
And this is Bret Hart, really, when he was coming into the top of his game. It is really one of the best matches you will see. I'm really not trying to pump it up too much for you. I'm not saying it's a 5-star match. It is not. What I'm saying is, it is one of the most enjoyable matches I have seen. And it is very realistic. And it is so very good. And I hope you, and I hope our listeners, enjoy the match.
I hope so, too. I mean, it looks very promising. It has two people in the match that I very, very much enjoy watching their in-ring prowess.
Mm-hmm. Also, I will say this. Curt Hennig was suffering from a back injury at the time. A herniated disc, I believe. He had such respect and such love for Bret Hart that he was willing to come back and take the loss. And by the way, after 20 plus fucking years, not a spoiler
warning.
Let me say, Bret Hart wins the Intercontinental Championship. Oh my God!
Hope that doesn't.
Did not see that coming. It's not like this is documented in WWE history like forever.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you've heard about it at least once on WWE television.
Sporkle it. It's there. Yeah. Anyway, Curt Hennig came back because he wanted to drop the title to Bret Hart because he thought Bret Hart needed the opportunity. And this is Curt Hennig, who is not just Intercontinental Champion back when that meant something. This is a former American Wrestling Association World Champion. When, you know, fucking Vern Gagne, Curt Hennig had the blessing of Vern Gagne, one of the purest wrestlers in the industry, one of the purest wrestling promoters in the industry, to hold the title, taking it from his perennial champion, Nick Bockwinkel, who, by the way, absolutely Hall of Famer, especially in the WWF Hall of Fame, even with Kurt Angle a little later. Actually, I think, did Hennig come first?
Between who and who? Vern Gagne? Vern Gagne, no, and Curt Hennig?
Hennig and Nick Bockwinkel.
I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure it was Nick.
Anyway. Curt Hennig versus Bret Hart. Mr. Perfect versus Bret Hart. I highly recommend you check out this match because it is really, really awesome. It is what made me a true wrestling fan. I'd been on the periphery. I'd watched it from time to time. That was the match that converted me completely.
Well, I mean, and I haven't seen it before either. So, you know, fans, we're in this together. We're in this a 20-minute, 55-second match you can find on YouTube. I have it up right now. Oh, shit. I have it up right now. I'm probably going to watch it sometime tomorrow when I got for it, but okay. Everybody, check it out. Now we need to move on to...
Well, this is a perfect segue because I can say, well, if you like it or you don't like it, tell me how you feel about it.
Please?
Yeah, tell us how you feel. Not only will we have comments enabled on the podcast page, but we will also have an email address.
Oh, what's this email address, George?
The email address. That would be signature M, all one word, @ymail.com. Again, that's signature M @ymail.com.
Not Gmail, but Ymail. Email us. Tell us how you feel
email
about
us.
How you felt about a match. Tell us when we're wrong. Tell us. Mm-hmm.
Correct us if we win. If you can survive, if we let you. Anyway, anything else you want to bring up, Lane?
Another thing about the email, we'll read them on the air too.
Yeah.
Just, you know, let us know if you want us to read them on the air. But, you know, shouldn't we probably say not to do anything like absolutely bat fucked left ways?
No.
Oh.
You underestimate how much email we get, dude.
Okay.
If you have a friend who wants to email, please email. If you have a friend of a friend who wants to email, please email. If you want to email, feel free to email us. Also, feel free to comment at madeafail.net.
Spread the joy. Tell your wrestling fan friends. Say, hey, we got two new guys doing a podcast about wrestling. You should come check them out. And they'll be all like, oh, wrestling podcasts. I love those.
Actually, I'm making an actual website. If you don't want to email us, but you do want to comment, here's where you go. It's signature move, one word, dot, madeafail.net.
Like net, like a net you put under a trapeze, right?
Like you put under a trapeze, yes.
Okay.
Is there any kind of net? Is there any way you spell that differently?
I'm thinking, but I can't figure one out.
No, there's not. No, it's just net, dude.
Yeah.
Anyway, signaturemove.madeafail.net. If you have something to say, feel free to say it in comments. If you have something else to say that you want us to read on the air, feel free to say it in email. Please, we will read emails on the air.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously, there's not enough news in the wrestling world in 2 weeks that's important enough for us to fucking read it.
So, you know, if you guys got stories that we haven't covered or that we forgot or that we missed that are extremely important, tell us. Exactly. Let us know. We'll give you the credit.
Exactly.
We'll say homeboy emailed us about, you know, Chris Jericho doing backflips on the top of the Empire State Building. That's news.
No. Oh, no. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's kind of news. It's also really stupid on his part because, well, he's doing backflips on the Empire State Building.
It was either him or Juventud Guerrero. I didn't know which one would be more believable.
Juventud Guerrero.
That's who I thought it was. I was thinking Chris Jericho was the guy in the mask, but now I'm thinking about it. Yeah, Juventud sounds
Wait,
like me.
What?
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 How did you confuse Juventud Guerrero and Chris Jericho?
I forgot it was Monday yesterday.
Okay. So that was the signature move premiere podcast.
Number one, hopefully of 1,000.
I'm George, I break your back and I humble you.
I'm Brian. I'm here to make everyone's life fun.
Later, folks.
Peace.
Good night. And if you're not down with that, we got two words for ya.
Listen to us?
That's three words.
Oh, so it's suck it then.
Pretty much.
All right. Do I get a cookie now?
No.
Damn it.
This has been a Made a Fail production.